Lindsay, welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. I am so happy to welcome today someone to the program whose book is really touching, and I was so happy to discover that she calls herself a Scout for Joy. And the name of her book is Incurable Optimist, Living with Illness and Chronic Hope. And I'm so happy to welcome you to the program, Jennifer Kramer Miller. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello, Patsy. How are you? I'm just so happy to be talking to you today.
Well, I was so, you know, I was so touched when I read that you call yourself a Scout for Joy. And
yes, a Joy Scouter.
That's it. It is wonderful. It is wonderful. You know, your story is a difficult story to tell, but as you write, it is an important story. That's what I like to do here on Joy on Paper, to bring to my listeners a variety of books. Sometimes it's a book, a cozy mystery, so that they forget everything. You know, they could just get into the book and forget all of their problems. And sometimes it's a thriller that will take them to another country and they will open their minds to traveling. But then I also like to bring these touching books about people that people have written about troubles in their lives and how they've dealt with it, because that gives courage to other people. So your book tells this horrific story of what you've gone through, but it also shows your great spirit.
Oh, thank you so much. And you know, we really all go through things in our lives, don't we? Like, life is filled with challenges for all of us. So I think we can all learn from each other on how we manage those and find joy.
So, Incurable Optimist, tell us, give us the background of what happened to you, because it is, it's rather shocking because you got ill at such a young age.
Yes. So what happened was I was 22 years old, and I was a college graduate. I had a business degree and a psychology minor and lived in an apartment in Seattle with my best friend. I had a great new job, and I was just ready to launch. Felt filled with promise and raring to go. And then just one day, suddenly, I woke up and my eyes were very puffy and I just felt off, like, you know, something was wrong. I thought maybe I had a flu or a virus. But I went to a doctor and quickly learned that I had kidney damage, which they found by doing a simple urine test. And he said I needed a biopsy to figure out what the cause and extent of this kidney damage was. Well, that was kind of the domino moment when everything changed very quickly, because first of all, needing a biopsy, the word biopsy terrified me. I was 22. I had no idea what that meant. It just sounded like a cancer word. And after I had the biopsy, I quickly was told that I have a progressive kidney disease. And I had kidney failure in 6 months. So it was very rapid, very out of the blue. And I really felt like I'd been pulled from my rightful place in the world as a young person with all my life ahead of me to trying to figure out what next, when I was going to live forever, basically, with this kidney disease. So what happened is, when your kidneys fail, for your listeners who might not know, there's two options to stay alive. One is to be on dialysis, which is an artificial kidney machine that keeps you alive. It's not an easy way to live, but it does keep you alive, so there's a blessing in that. And then the preferred treatment is to eventually get a kidney transplant. So I was waiting for a kidney transplant, and I really thought, I'm going to get this kidney transplant. I'm going to go back to my life in Seattle, pick up where I left off, and just, you know, it's going to be a little blip, and I'm just going to kind of get over it. But what happened is I got the first transplant, and I've actually had four, so that's quite a bit. But when I got my first transplant, I had been on dialysis for a year and 8 months, and I was so excited that, you know, this was the train ride back to my future. But 3 days after I got that kidney, I learned that I had recurrence of my disease in the new kidney. And that was very devastating. I thought, now what? How am I ever going to have a meaningful life? I didn't know how long the kidney would last. I didn't know if I would ever get back to what I thought would be a normal life. And, you know, my doctor, who told me at that time, which was really helpful to manage expectations, he said that, you know, you have to view your transplant as a vacation from dialysis, because you're always going to need one or the other to stay alive. And so I did. I cherished the kidney. I really felt that I owed it to a family who made a decision, and an individual who made a decision to check a box at the DMV because they wanted to, you know, give the gift of life in the event of a tragedy. And I felt responsible for making my life a good one with that gift. And so I did have that kidney for 5 years and 3 months. And in that time, I savored all the things that it allowed me to do. I expanded my career at that time. I'm in the custom home building business. I was the vice president of sales and marketing. I met a guy who became my boyfriend, and we got married. And I had friends, and I was laughing, and I had life. I had this vibrant life, even though it was not quite like everybody else's. And I really cherished the time that I had with that kidney. And that's kind of an attitude that I've had to carry with me throughout my whole journey, because eventually that transplant petered out. I got another one, another gift of time and memories and life. And with that second transplant, not only did I receive the gift of life from a registered donor, but I then got pregnant and I have a daughter, and my daughter is an example of not only the gift of life that I received, but that gift allowed me to create life. And I have a brilliant, beautiful, genius daughter. So I couldn't be more grateful for what people do to help other people. And that's been some of the biggest lesson that I've learned, even though I've faced challenges, is that, oh my gosh, we have wonderful people in this world who help other people. And I think that knowing that myself, it makes me want to help people too. I love to be able to give back to the National Kidney Foundation. I'm currently the board chair of the Minnesota National Kidney Foundation, and I'm a mentor for kidney patients, and I'm an ambassador for Donate Life. And I just have this very strong lust for life because I know how precious it is. And so, you know, then there's obviously two more transplants. Well, what makes those miraculous is those were living donor transplants. So my mother, a very, very all-in loving mom, who wasn't able to donate her kidney to me for my first one, there had been changes in the matching system by the time I needed my third one, and she donated her kidney to me.
Oh, wow.
And that was just such, I can't even explain it to you, Patsy. I mean, my mom has done so much for me, been there every step of the way. And she insisted on donating her kidney to me when I was 37 and she was 65. And I thought she had done quite enough already. I was not interested in having her do that. But she really, you know, she underscored for me that she made me think of my daughter and said, would you do this for your daughter? And right then, she just told me that, you know, you're my daughter. You can't take this away from me. I want to do this. And so I accepted her love, and I accepted her kidney, and she gave me 8 more years of really wonderful, wonderful life. And then to top it all off for my last kidney, I mean, there's a lot in the book, so you're still going to want to read the book.
Yeah.
But these are just the highlights. My husband donated his kidney indirectly to me for my last kidney transplant, which was almost, Patsy, this is a record and worth celebrating, 12 years ago. So I've had this last kidney for 12 years. That's an amazingly long time. It's going very well. And my husband couldn't donate directly to me, so he went into a paired exchange program. And miracle upon miracle, a 25-year-old altruistic donor, total stranger to me, volunteered to donate his kidney to somebody who might need it, and we were a match. And he has given me the last 12 years along with my husband's generosity.
Wow, what a story it is. And people, you really have to read the book because there's so much more to it. And what is amazing is your spirit throughout all of these years and how you have just managed to make so much good out of something that really was so unexpected. Now, kidney transplants, kidneys were the first organs to be transplanted, and that was all the way back in 1954. And then it took a few years, I think, before they discovered how to transplant other organs. So they had a lot of experience with kidneys, but still, was there ever an understanding of why you needed a kidney transplant in the first place? What happened to you?
Yeah, the disease that I unfortunately, you know, won the lottery for is an autoimmune disease, which there's an autoimmune factor which says, you know, I don't really like kidneys, and I'm going to kind of go after them. And they have not been able to figure out what that factor is in the blood that circulates that causes this autoimmune reaction. But they have definitely been able to figure out how to reduce its impact. So that's why 12 years is a good example of that. I've had this, it's called, got a big name with a lot of syllables. It's called focal segmental glomerular sclerosis, but FSGS is a shorthand way of saying it. And they do have more techniques today for me to help kind of dampen down that autoimmune reaction, so that I'm able to keep this kidney and keep it functioning and live a good life. But it doesn't go away. It's always there.
Now, during the pandemic, were you more vulnerable to COVID?
Absolutely, yes. You know, during the pandemic, we heard so much about, like, it's better now except if you're immunosuppressed. And a lot of the little footnotes on everything would be, it's all good except for the immunosuppressed. Well, I'm immunosuppressed. Anybody with a transplant takes immunosuppressant medication. And while that helps me keep my kidney, it does make me more susceptible to getting infections and things like COVID. So I have to be very careful with my hand washing and staying, you know, away from people who are sick.
Now, throughout all of this time, as you said, you made a career for yourself. You were a businesswoman and a mother and living a full life. So your message to people is that not to give up.
Absolutely. And I think, I strongly believe that joy is always available to us, no matter what situation we find ourselves in. I mean, I noticed that pretty early on, like I was having kidney failure, laughing with my, you know, at some funny movie. And I just remember sitting with my family in a movie theater thinking, yeah, I'm going through a lot of things right now, but I am so able to laugh. I am so able to savor a funny moment. And I started compiling all the things in my mind that I still have. I still have people I love in my life, and I still can laugh, and I still can appreciate a blue sky and a ripe avocado and all the things that, you know, sometimes it's easy to just live your life and take for granted what a miracle it is. But I'm so highly tuned now to just what a miracle it is to be alive and savor the smallest things. So I think that when we seek joy, we can find it. And perspective is really, really important. And I think that goes for all of us.
That's so true. Now, when you were going through all of this and you spent a lot of time, you know, in the hospital and getting and recovering, did reading books help you?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I poured myself into books that really, really helped my perspective and changed my focus. And I think books are so powerful to do that. And I actually hope that Incurable Optimist is going to be very helpful to people who are going through hard things. But I read a book called Creative Visualization by Shakti Golam. It's a classic book. It's been around for a long time. And it really deals with how, you know, our thoughts can direct our energy, and putting really good energy into the world for ourselves is a powerful thing. And I really gripped onto that because I thought, whatever I'm going to imagine is going to happen, if it does or if it doesn't, at least I'm creating this wonderful thought. And I just really, really gripped onto the idea of, you know, creating what I wanted in my life through positive thinking. And there was another book I read called by Bernie Siegel, a doctor who worked with a lot of patients and found that their outlook and their kind of forward focus could make a big difference in their health. And I really decided that I was going to be positive because I thought it would be good for my health. And apparently it's worked because I feel very happy with my life. I know I still go through challenges. We all do. But I think that we have to learn to manage uncertainty and we have to hold on to hope because hope is a pretty good life preserver.
And you certainly have hung on to it. And so many people, I had not realized the numbers that there were just in 2022, there were over 40,000 organ transplants, and many of those were kidneys. I think around 25,000 were kidney transplants.
Yeah.
So.
And 25,000 was a record year for us. And, you know, through the National Kidney Foundation, my work there, we're very pleased with the fact that there were just over 25,000 kidney transplants in 2022. It was a banner year. But at the same time, it's important to remember that there's about 100,000 people on a waiting list for a kidney. So it really points out we're seeing, you know, great improvements in the number of transplants, but we also still have this big gap between 100,000 and 25,000. That leaves quite a few people who do not get the kidneys they need in a year. That's why registered organ donation is very important. That's why living donors are lifesavers. And anybody, you know, I've just been so blessed to have both my mom and my husband and this altruistic donor who I don't even know step forward and look into that. And anybody who knows anybody who might need a kidney or wants to look into living donation, the National Kidney Foundation's website, kidney.org, has really a wealth of information and resources for anybody who has any questions about kidney health or donation or any of those things.
And, of course, people can live with just one kidney. So many people do. Are the cases of kidney problems going up? Is it worse now?
Yes.
Why?
Yeah, kidney disease is a tricky one. It's kind of, they call it the silent killer because people can have compromised kidney function for a long time. You have to be in pretty advanced stages before the symptoms really show up. So some of the things that, you know, for the average person out there who wants to focus on their kidney health, some of the things that are really important are blood pressure and blood sugar, because the two main causes or leading factors to kidney disease are high blood pressure and diabetes. So people should know their blood pressure. They should check it. It's so easy to check your blood pressure and make sure that that's being well managed. You know, people's diets are important. There's nothing that's not common sense. I mean, nobody is saying, you know, it's good for your kidney to eat an unhealthy diet. Like, we all know we should eat a healthy diet, but that doesn't impact your kidney health, is keeping hydrated, eating healthy food, exercising is always very, very helpful for anything. It's kind of a magic pill. And then, you know, like I said, with the blood pressure and diabetes, those things should be really carefully monitored if you have those two things.
Well, I want to tell you, the book is very moving. I don't know if you, I mean, you're a fine writer, too.
Thank you.
And you've certainly found this joy of being able to put your words on paper and see the difference that they can make. So I want to tell people the name of the book is Incurable Optimist, Living with Illness and Chronic Hope. And it is by Jennifer Kramer Miller. You can get it online. And what website do you want people to go to?
An easy place to buy the book at many different locations is incurable-optimist.com.
Incurable-optimist.com. And people also check into kidney donations and organ donations in general. And Jennifer...
And also just check into being kind to people. I think that's one of my big takeaways is when people are kind to other people, it just makes the whole world a better place.
It certainly does. And I think your strength and your courage through all that you've gone through and the fact that you can you have joy in your heart and you want to share it, I think it's wonderful. And I hope that, you have to write another book.
I know. That's what I'm going to be working on soon. Today is the launch day of Incurable Optimist. So I'm so excited I got to spend it with you, Patsy. And yeah, I'm delighted that it's out into the world today. So I really hope people who need it will find it, and I hope that it will do some good.
Well, thank you again, Jennifer. Thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. You are a joy, and we are so very, very happy that you're doing so well and that you're going to write another book, and you'll be back here, okay?
Absolutely, and thank you for all you do for writers and readers. I think your work is fantastic.
Okay, thank you again, Jennifer. Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, oh, what an amazing woman. I mean, this is an amazing story, and the book you will find so fascinating, Incurable Optimist, Living with Illness and Chronic Hope, and it's available online. Now, we're going to play a book buzz from Bria Burton, and this is a very special one because it is from Lou. It's a book written by Lou Diamond Phillips, of course, of La Bamba fame, and it is Bria Burton's, it's a wonderful book. It's called, where do we have the, I thought we had it up. It's Tinderbox, Soldier of Indira. And why we're playing it today is to remind everyone that on August 22nd, Lou Diamond Phillips is going to be on Joy on Paper. And Bria Burton is going to take over this program because she managed to get through to Lou, and he's going to be on Joy on Paper. So here's her book buzz, and we'll have some commercials, and I'll be back with my next guest.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2020 debut by actor Lou Diamond Phillips, The Tinderbox, Soldier of Indira. This standalone young adult novel is available in print, ebook, and audiobook. Now, let's download the book buzz. A great war rages between the invading Indirans and the Monoliths, two races divided by the Grand Schism, a cataclysmic event that tore their once shared planet in two. An Indiran soldier named Everson barely escapes as the rest of his compatriots perish, and Mono claims a battle victory. Everson's identity as the Prince of Indira remains a secret as he is conscripted to retrieve a mysterious tinderbox. The seers have prophesied the downfall of their mad king when the princess weds a soldier at the rise of the Aurora constellation. The king of Mono believes the tinderbox will ensure his unimpeded reign, along with permanently imprisoning his daughter. When Everson succeeds in finding the tinderbox, he flees, aided by its high-tech and supernatural properties. Everson's journey leads him to a poor community of farmers where he recognizes how the mad king's reign has oppressed the people. The tinderbox offers him a portal to the princess where their brief encounter heralds the start of the prophesied events. Everson will do whatever it takes to rescue the princess and restore peace, and the Mad King will move heaven and earth to stop him. Equal parts military science fiction and space opera, this genre-bending tale weaves a clever and twisty web of court intrigue paired with high-tech ingenuity and layered with echoes of Shakespearean drama. Author and actor Lou Diamond Phillips is best known for roles in television and films such as Longmire, Stargate Universe, and La Bamba. His debut novel began as an idea from his wife, Yvonne. Her artwork is embedded throughout the novel. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and boy, oh boy, do I have a beautiful book. I'm holding it up to the camera. I can tell you, you can spend hours with this book, and I am looking forward to talking to the author because she is on right now. You hear? In a minute, she'll be on, and it is going to be so wonderful to talk to her again. And Christina Sauer. She puts a sweet in, sweet and sour. So, hi, Christina.
Hi, Patsy. It's so great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad to talk to you. And now, you know, every time I get Chinese food now, when I get sweet and sour, I think of you. It's so funny. A few weeks ago, I got a craving for Chinese food again, and I'm going, yeah, sweet and sour, and I'm thinking about you because I knew you were going to be on again.
Oh, that just makes me so happy.
Well, you are so sweet, and this book, I love this book. It is called Can't Get Enough Horse Stuff, and it's true. I can't get enough. I love this book so much. I spent hours on it. I've had it for a while. I'm so lucky. You know, I get all these books ahead of everybody. And National Geographic books, of course, are my favorite. I have a table just with National Geographic books because I always pick one up. Even if I'm watching television, I will pick up a Nat Geo book, and I don't waste my time looking at commercials. I will be looking through one of the Nat Geo books. But this one, I spent hours because every picture in this book, every photograph is superb.
Oh, well, one, this is music to my ears. I'm so glad you do that. I'm going to start telling people to do that during commercial breaks now, too.
Oh, no, that is a purpose of National Geographic. So we don't look at the commercials. We look at the books because they're written, you know, especially the children's books. I have a whole bunch of them just on the table next to me. And because you can pick it up anywhere, turn to any page, and get involved. And, you know, it's wonderful.
It's really true, and this one especially. I would say this one's a little bit lighter on text. It's just so easy. There's lots of bubbles and text boxes that you can quickly learn and see the animals that you're learning about right away and have a new fact that you learned for the day.
Oh, it is fantastic. And the wonderful thing I always tell people about National Geographic books is they are inspiring. You read these books, you read a Nat Geo book, a Nat Geo magazine like I did when I was a kid, and they inspire you to do things. I want to go places where I can see these horses. I want to go to, you know, Scotland and see a horse. I want to go to Ireland and see a horse. I want to be up close and personal with horses, and maybe even go to Sable Island, which is all horses.
Exactly. So this book especially is so aspirational. When we came up with this series, it's called Can't Get Enough, and then we fill in the blank with either an animal or a science topic. We really think about the kids and what they love. And as a young girl, I was such a horse girl. And many people relate to horses and love horses. So we say, okay, what aspects of horses do you want to learn more about? And whether that's, you know, learning about mythical horses or the history of horses or even taking personality quizzes to figure out what job with horses would be best for you. It's such a great aspirational book for the budding horse enthusiast.
Well, and for everybody who just loves animals and loves to look at these photographs, I couldn't decide which one I loved the most, but I must say the American Bashkir's hair. This horse with the curly hair is so gorgeous.
Isn't it beautiful? I'm like, I've seen a movie about this one now, so I can just watch a documentary and learn all more about it.
Oh, somebody should make a movie about it. I think it's so cute. I had never seen a horse like that with all this curly hair. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I really love it. It's got curly eyelashes, too. It's just adorable.
Oh. So when you were a child, did you ride?
I did. I actually was lucky enough to live on a farm that had horses. We had about 7 of them growing up. It was a dream. But I will say my favorite thing was actually not riding, but we had this amazing Belgian draft horse named Blondie. And Blondie would pull a cart, and so I'd be in the cart. The problem was, Blondie's original owners, when she was a foal, only spoke German, and I spoke no German. So I had to learn German in order to communicate with my horse and tell her where to go.
Oh, that's beautiful. There's no photo of you in here with it. They should have put a photo of you here.
Oh, my goodness. I'll say, honestly, that was back before we used to have cameras on our phones, so I would have to pull out an old photograph.
Oh, that's so. This book then was a particular joy for you.
Oh, absolutely. And it really just enhanced some of the basic knowledge that I feel kids kind of pick up, whether it's through other books or TV shows. It kind of empowers them too. We call it experimental learning here. And so a lot of them do activities like make a peppermint cookie for a horse if they are interacting with one, so they can bake a little bit. Or design their own riding outfit and learn about the safety factors that go into what you wear when you ride a horse, like wearing a helmet or the type of pants that are perfect for riding. It's just a really great interactive book.
It is. And as always with Nat Geo, it is laid out perfectly with all these photographs, but then the wonderful little stories that accompany it, and also the little facts and the jokes and the games, so much to keep a child busy, really for hours.
Oh, it's true. And I think one of the joys of being an editor at National Geographic Kids is thinking about who this book is going to impact and whose hands this is going to be in. And remembering as a kid, there was nothing more fun than to read a book and then go to a parent or teacher or librarian and say, I know something you don't know. Guess what?
Exactly. And there are so many things in it that people will, you know, the kids will love to know. For example, I'm sure many kids will find it fascinating that George Washington and Napoleon and Alexander the Great all owned and rode Arabian horses.
Yes. And you find out, you're like, oh, I wonder why. And what about them made all these leaders want these horses? And they were definitely fast and beautiful, and they also had 2 fewer vertebrae. So they had this cool trait that their tails would stick straight up when they were happy.
Yeah, it's beautiful. They are beautiful horses. And now, I didn't ride. There's a part in here about horses. If you have a horse, because they are social animals, if you have only one horse, you might want to get a goat to go with that horse. Now, I had a lot of experience with goats when I was a kid. We had goats.
Really?
And so it was, I'm more on the goat side. terrified. I was a little bit terrified of horses, but I think it's because my grandfather did have a horse, but it was a scary horse, and you'd never let us on it, so I never got to ride. But I love looking at horses, and my mother-in-law was a particularly great horsewoman. She was born in Poland, and so many Polish people, of course, they love horses. In the old days, they were great horse people. So I always found that fascinating.
Well, it's funny you bring up that particular page, because that's one of my favorite photos in the whole book, with the goat standing on top of the horse. They become such fast friends that a tiny goat will love sitting on the back and taking a ride on a horse's back whenever they're in the same area together.
I think it's such a beautiful photograph. It really is. Oh, Nat Geo photographers have so much fun. It's wonderful they get paid for having so much fun.
It's true. It's quite a fun job. Sometimes I'm like, maybe that's my next ambition.
Well, whoever went to some of these locations, because some of these horses are in rare locations, they're not just around the corner. For example, the Schuvalskys? Tell us about the Schuvalskys horse.
Yeah, so because that one is so hard to pronounce, we usually just call it the P horse. Makes it much easier, like the letter P. And it's actually considered the last wild horse. You can find it in Mongolia. And they call it the P horse, which is Seki, which means spirit in Mongolian. And it is beautiful. It has got a mane that sticks up straight. It's got this thick neck and wide belly, and it's tan. It's honestly one of the coolest looking horses that went extinct at one point, and then we were able to bring it back.
Oh, it is. It's so, with this, the way that it sticks up straight, I thought, well, this is very, unusual. And I was thinking about the photographer. The day the photographer got the assignment, and he said, or she was told, "You're going to Mongolia." That must have been a great day.
I love hearing stories of photographers, because we think we're like, oh yeah, you get there and you take a picture, but I don't know if you've ever taken pictures of animals. They don't like to cooperate right away. So they're usually out there for many weeks trying to just get that one great shot put on the cover of National Geographic magazine or in our book.
Exactly. Oh, and what's the horse with the straight up, the curvy ears? That is fascinating.
Oh, the Marowari?
Yeah.
It's such a cool horse. I love that one. They literally touch each other, their little ears, and it's such a cute photo.
It's adorable. It's absolutely adorable.
Yeah, and the fun fact about that horse is actually from the region. It's called Jodhpur, India. And that's where, when you hear a rider talk about what they wear, they'll say, oh yeah, I wear Jodhpurs. And really, it's just a certain type of riding pants that originated in that region. And it has really wide hips and really skinny ankles.
Now, one of the things I was surprised, I love the picture with the braided hair.
Yes. We talk about the fact that a mane is made of hair. It's not what you think of, like a fluffy fur. It is hair just like ours. And in order to keep it healthy, we love braiding horses' hair. It keeps it from breaking, keeps it out of the horse's eyes, and it also keeps it free from dirt. So if you have your own horse, feel free to brush the hair out or their mane out and braid it.
It's that photograph is so beautiful. So did you braid your horse's hair?
Oh, yes. I used to braid it all the time. And in fact, I had a couple of friends who would come over and we'd put little clips in the horse's hair as we would ride. We had one named Princess Lilac, who particularly liked her purple clip.
Oh, that's fun that you were raised with horses. I think that's fantastic. Now, the draft horses are beautiful, aren't they?
Oh, they are stunning. Everything from the Clydesdales to the Frisians. And we tell kids, too, that if they've ever watched a Disney princess movie or any of their favorite fantasy movies, you usually see this massive, gorgeous horse with this long, flowing mane and very shiny coat. And that is a Frisian. It's kind of Hollywood's favorite horse because of its look.
Now, one of the nice things about horses, now this, actually, I know something about it because we had a friend who was a rider from, he was from Holland, and he lived here near me. And one of the things he did, he was training, you know, horse people to ride horses for dressage. But one of the things that he loved to do was to take children on, you know, sick children on horses, and he said it was so great for them.
Oh, horse therapy is one of the best tools to help individuals with either physical or mental disabilities or any kind of health issues, because they call it hippotherapy, but it's not related to hippos at all, just talking about the Latin for horses. And it honestly, it strengthens muscles that keeps the brain how to learn balance. So whether it's someone with CP or an individual who's never walked before, you can get on a horse and actually simulate the walking gait or how horses move and strengthen your own muscles as if you were walking. And then when it comes to emotional and mental health, we have equine-assisted therapy, and we see a lot of people riding or grooming or feeding horses, and it helps them. And we see lower blood pressure, we see happier demeanors, we see a stronger heart, and just overall health. Horses are incredible creatures. Not only are they fun to ride, but they're actually good for you to ride.
And that connection that they... there's this bond that is created when people are around horses, and there is something special about them that really connects, I think, with human nature. Something about them when you touch a horse, even just sort of you put your hand on a horse. You're right. There's something. I think it calms you.
It really does, and we even talk about in one of the expert sections is a woman who does horse therapy in hospitals, and she brings mini horses to hospitals for children or other patients who are battling some form of illness just for comfort. So similar to like how you pet a dog, could you imagine having a little mini horse come and cuddle with you? It would just make your day.
Yeah, it would make my day. I'd love it. It's fantastic. Well, I think that one of the nice things, as I said, about these kind of books, and this is a time where young people really need to look outside of the electronic media, to look beyond that. And looking at these photographs, I think a lot of kids will look at them and they will then ask their parents, can we go see a horse? Can we, you know, go someplace where we can look at a horse and touch a horse, ride a horse, and just be around them, which is so good. So anything that will get kids outside, will get kids doing something other than playing on their electronic telephones all day long, I think is good. They will be breathing fresh air, and when you get out there with horses, it is a fantastic feeling.
Exactly. So that's our hope, is that this will inspire kids who already love horses, know more about them, and know how to go approach them and work with them in their own life.
Now, tell us just a little bit about the speed gene.
Oh, the speed gene. That one was fascinating to me because, so some horses we've discovered, there's this gene. It's a myostatin gene, and it's composed of a lot of letters. So a lot of genes have all these letters. And we don't really go into the really nuances of genetics, but we just explain that there are letters in genes. And how fast a horse runs is dependent on those letters. So if you have more letters in that gene, you actually have a faster sprinting horse. If there are less letters, the horse is usually a long distance runner. So there is a difference, just like you see in humans with runners. There are some people who are built and can run really, really fast in a short period of time. And then there's others who are there for the distance. They go long distances at a consistent pace. And horses we see are the same.
Wow. It's fascinating. Everything in this book is fascinating. It's wonderful what you've done here. Again, Christina, you are so good at this, and I know that you had lots of fun with this one particularly because it's something that you love. And do you still get to ride sometimes?
Oh, yes. Every time I get to go back to my parents' place, I get to jump on a horse and work with others with horses.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's wonderful. Well, I think it's a great book, a wonderful book for everybody. And of course, it's if you have a kid in your life, and this is something I always tell everybody, if you don't have a kid in your life, can you imagine how thrilled a kid in a hospital would be to receive this book? Children in hospitals need books, and particularly a book from National Geographic. One of these books, because this book is filled with glorious photographs, but also filled with jokes and humor, all sorts of horse, very corny horse jokes, wonderful, yeah. Wonderful games that children can play. This book would give hours of fun to any kid in a hospital. So if you don't have a kid in your life, just go online, order it, and have it sent to either your local hospital or to one of the major hospitals like Shriners Hospitals for Children. Just send it, find out their address, and it will be shipped directly to the hospital as a donation in your name to a child. Because this book, particularly this horse one, can't get enough horse stuff is true. I would tell you also, if you have seniors, if you have somebody in a senior's home, send them this book, because again, seniors will love this book as much as any kid, and it is really provides hours of fun.
Patsy, you are our greatest marketer, and I appreciate so much for you promoting this book, because that is exactly the intention, is to reach kids near and far and provide them and empower them with information that they couldn't have otherwise. So thank you so much.
And I think one of the areas, too, that people who, anybody who knows somebody in a senior's home, give them this book, because, again, it's easy to read. It's laid out so beautifully. It's a wonderful, wonderful gift for a senior. And it's, yeah, it's a wonderful gift for anybody. Keep it next to your television and don't listen to the commercials and buy all that stuff or get influenced by all that junk food. Read a Nat Geo book. How about that?
I love it. Yes, please, and thank you.
Okay,
so
Christina Sauer. Christina Sauer, you put the sweetness in my life, and you are Chinese food to me. So thank you again for being on Joy on Paper.
Thank you,
Dad. Okay, bye-bye now, Christina. Bye. All right, what a book. I love this book. Yesterday I was supposed to be organizing. I don't know. I was supposed to organize something, the cupboard or something. And I sat down. I read this book all hours. Okay. We're going to play something very special. Now we're going to play La Bamba, because we want to just remind you that Lou Diamond Phillips is going to be here on Joy on Paper. And I am so proud of Bria Burton, who does these wonderful sci-fi book buzzes for us. And she was persistent, and we were able to get him. Of course, he's always so busy and in demand, but because of the writer's strike, he has some time. So we're going to play La Bamba in honor of him. And remember, August 22nd, Lou Diamond Phillips will be right here on Joy on Paper.
Here's a bit of a rattlesnake.
Por ti seré, yo no soy marinero, yo
Okay, I love that song. That's on my playlist, actually. I love that song. It makes you want to get up and dance and exercise, so it is a wonderful song, and we are really so thrilled that he is going to be able to join us. Well, Bria Burton did it. She was persistent. She didn't give up. She kept up calling him, and finally we were able to get a date for him. So it's very exciting that he's going to be on. And meanwhile, you know, just remember what I always tell you, and that's true. You know, I was really happy to bring that earlier story to you. You should write a book. Everybody should write a book. Remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like we are hoping for Carol J. Perry, who has written 13 Witch City mystery stories, and she's writing another one right now. So anyway, everybody, say something nice to somebody today. Find the joy in your life. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. He saluted me. I saluted him because I should have been a general. I would have been a great general, and I would have been really, really tough. Anyway, everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Find the joy. Bye-bye.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.